Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm kind of upset that I'm not going to get to see AC/DC on this tour. It doesn't look like it. They're in Las Vegas tomorrow night, Sue. And I've been watching a lot of the clips on Instagram of the tour. And let's see, Allegiant Stadium, they go to Ford Field, then Gillette out in Foxborough, Pittsburgh, Landover, Maryland, Tampa, Florida, Nashville, Chicago, Cleveland.
Wow.
Then they go overseas, but nothing here. You know, you do have Nashville, I guess. Nashville would be the place to go.
I totally agree.
To the football stadium down there. Although I don't mind Soldier Field as a stadium. It looks weird from the outside. But that is, I would make my exception on not seeing artists over the age of 70 for AC/DC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. But Tim Summer's going to join us a little bit later this hour. Tim's our favorite music guy, of course. He's a music journalist. He was there in the infancy of MTV. He signed Hootie and the Blowfish. Then he wrote a book last year about doing that. He looked at some of the tours that are out across the country, including AC/DC, but he really focused on St. Louis and what might be coming here. So we're going to have some picks, some selections, if you will, Sue. Speaking of concerts, Brooks and Dunn in town tonight at Enterprise Center. So keep that in mind. If you're coming downtown for the Cardinals game, it might be a little bit more crowded. But Tim will address all the concert situations and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame winners, I think, are announced tomorrow. I think I said Sunday, but it might be tomorrow. We'll see where his head is on that coming up. I also have an audio cut of the day. One of the big stories today is this Wisconsin judge who was arrested for lying, or basically wasn't lying. Paul Morrow is going to really explain it here in a moment. Essentially giving the feds information about an illegal that was in her courthouse, and that did not turn out so well for her. But we'll find out all of that and more here. Fox News's Paul Morrow, who is a retired NYPD inspector. He's an attorney. He's the founder of a great website called theopsdesk.org. Lots to talk about. The Gilgo Beach case, the documentary, Karen Reach trial is underway. Paul, how are you this afternoon? Welcome back.
Good. How you doing, Mark?
Doing pretty well. I'm heading out of the country this weekend, so I'm kind of excited about that. Of course, my colleague Sue.
I'll rub it in.
Yeah, and my listeners are probably sick and tired of hearing that. But yeah, I'm excited that it's this Friday, Paul.
I'm sure you are. I'm stuck here in Hell's Kitchen, so let's not talk about it.
Well, let's talk about what's going on the planet right now. And this whole thing I talked about a couple hours ago on my Reardon Roundtable on 97.1 FM Talk, the arrest of these judges, and on the Wisconsin situation in particular, I find interesting. And now you already have protesters out there saying, release the judge, release the judge. I don't think the judge is in a jail cell right now. But this is rather fascinating, this development, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm going to take a little bit, no, let's not call it a victory lap, but maybe take a little bit of credit for prescience. And here's why. At the end of the day, if you really play out all the vectors involved here, what you end up with, what you default to, is the fact that the federal government has supremacy, period, end of story. So there have been a number of instances here as part of the entire sort of sanctuary city mentality that the local judges really seem to have been obstructionists. She's not the first one who's pulled a stunt like this. And I've been advocating, I've actually written on it. You mentioned the Ops Desk. It's on my Substack. If you go to opsdesk.org, it goes right to the Substack. And I've written about the fact that what the federal government should be doing is exactly what they did here. And here's why. The problem with getting a lot of the worst first out is finding them. These guys are very elusive, especially the gangbangers. They're connected in all different cities. They travel city to city. We've seen the connectivity between New York City, Aurora, and Miami, and Athens, Georgia, with the Lake and Riley case. So as these guys go mobile, it's very tough for local law enforcement or even the feds to keep track of them. But one place they often do turn up is court dates, because they're locked up on state charges. So the guy does a robbery, does an assault, whatever, narco charges, he's in state custody. You know for a date certain, on April 18th, April 22nd, whatever, at 2 p.m., he's going to be in that courthouse. That's your ex right there. Your ex smokes the spot. You go in with the warrant. You say, I got a warrant for this guy, federal warrant for this guy. It's a removal order. It's not a detention request, which doesn't have the force of a judge. This is a warrant from a federal judge. Everybody in that courthouse, from the state judges to the corrections officers to the court officers, are subservient to that. And if you get in the way, including the judge, you are liable. And finally, it looks like the rubber hit the road. That whole paradigm just played out. And that is what happens in a nation of laws. So they can protest, they can stand on their heads. But if in fact the judge did this, and that's, you know, it's going to be a fact issue. But if the judge did what's alleged, then you know what? Tough luck.
Yeah.
And she's looking at maybe losing her license, and that's all she deserves.
So in this situation, though, Paul, what do we know about that case? Hannah Dugan's the judge. They say that there was this illegal that was supposed to be arrested in the courthouse. To your point, there was a court date, Eduardo Flores Ruiz, and she sort of directed the agents away from where he was. Do we know anything about the particulars there?
Yeah, so that's where the wiggle room is, and that is why I caveated it a little bit regarding it being a fact issue, because, of course, she has her story and the feds have theirs. Now, this is one of those things where, look, you're going to arrest a judge in a courtroom, you better have the facts right. So, if indeed he did what's alleged, which is there's two different strands of reporting here. One, from a local reporter who broke the story, who seems to be quite well-sourced, says that she told the arrestee, the perp, Ruiz, to go essentially hide in the jury room, which I can just tell you is a sacrosanct area of the courthouse.
Right.
Only the jury, the judge, and the court officers are supposed to have access. The other story is that she directed him to a public area, and that seems to be her out, because she's going to say, no, I just told him get out of the courtroom. He went to a public area. He was by the elevators or whatever. That's all I did. And she's going to try to, you know, make that wiggle room her safe harbor. And it's really going to come down to what she actually did. But if she did indeed obstruct the way DOJ is alleging, the FBI and then DOJ is alleging, then not only does she deserve what she gets, but I hope this stands for the larger proposition that, and I've been saying it from the beginning, because this is just a logical conclusion. You know where these guys are going to be. Everybody's complaining, oh my God, they're just turning them loose, and it's the same bunch of illegal migrant criminals. Well, we know where they are when they're in custody, in state custody. Grab them then. And if corrections or a judge or a court officer or local cops get in the way, you're part of the case now. And then that's it. I'd be going right into these. I would be going into jails, state jails.
Right.
With warrants and just saying, produce the body. And if you don't, you're going too. And you watch how fast they'll give these bodies up.
It's just, to me, it's fascinating, Paul, how the default position every time with the Democrats is, oh, we're going to take the side of the criminal. We're going to take the side of the illegal. And, you know, this BS about it only being about due process, give me a break. Now, I don't know where you are exactly on Abrego Garcia. There is a part of me that wishes they would fly him back here, serve him some caviar on the plane, give him some margaritas, maybe some real margaritas, and then kick his ass back out of the country, because they keep playing due process. It's only about due process. You know as well as I do, he gets back here and that happens. Wait, they don't have due process to lay on, but they're not going to be happy that he got kicked out of the country because they love gangbangers and criminals. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, and it's not a winner politically. It's just where emotionally they seem to default to. But it also comes out of the fact that anything Donald Trump does, they want to oppose. But let's tease out Abrego Garcia a little bit, because I think, and I've been writing about this and I've been putting it out on social media, sir. I think there's an original sin relative to Abrego Garcia that everybody is missing and you're not hearing about, and that's the following. The reason they have any purchase on Abrego Garcia, just to recount the facts, is let's recall two different judges said, yep, he's amenable to deportation, get him out, he's MS-13. Okay, fair enough. However, one judge said, I'm going to put in a withholding order. And what does that mean? He said he can't go back to El Salvador because, according to Abrego Garcia, if he goes back to El Salvador, his life is in danger from other gang members because of his affiliation with their team. And so as a result, he can go anywhere in the world, but not El Salvador. And that, by the way, is the mistake, quote unquote, that the Trump administration is admitting to. They're saying, we made a mistake by sending him to El Salvador. We should have sent them someplace else.
Right.
Well, aside from the fact that it's going to be very tough to find another country who wants an admitted gangbanger, because he is. I'm not going to play any games on this, all right? This guy's got 13 tattoos. He was picked up with a bunch of 13 members. Mark, let me just tell
you. Oh, my
God,
I know.
Speaking,
I know.
You can't be hanging around with a bunch of 13 members, flying their colors, wearing their flag, and not be a 13 member. So let's just get past
that. Well, let me just go with this. You know, I love the fact that he has MS-13 on his knuckles. Doesn't everyone get gang tattoos on their knuckles when they're not in a gang, Paul?
Oh, yeah, of course. I got TDA tattooed on my tuckers.
Right.
Come on. It's
exactly.
Now, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Who is this judge who entertained and put in this withholding order? Why is it the responsibility of the judiciary, of the American judiciary, to make these fine line distinctions relative to gang competition in foreign countries? So you're telling me you're a Salvadoran national, that's your nation. Yes, you're here illegally. Yes, you're a member of a gang. But you're worried about going home because the conditions there, thanks to you joining a gang, are hostile to you? Get lost. Not our problem. And that's the original sin here, and you're not hearing it from anybody. And I can't believe the talking point is being missed. If the whole dispute, the whole controversy is predicated on the idea that he couldn't go back to El Salvador because of this withholding order and the Trump administration blew through it, what we should be doing is saying these sorts of distinctions should not be the responsibility of the American judiciary. And I think this is a congressional fix, Mark. We got 11 million illegals just from the last administration that came in unvetted. I know they're not all gangsters. Thank God. Most of them are hardworking. I get all that. They are here illegally.
Right.
Different issue. Well, you want to get rid of the worst first. We're going to need a congressional fix for an expedited expulsion process. And we cannot entertain the quote-unquote due process with a capital D and a capital P here, because it'll take forever, on 11 million people and the, let's say, 1% to 2% of whom are gangbangers, and we got to worry about conditions in their home country. I'm sorry, but it's not my problem.
Look, that was well stated, better than anyone has explained it so far, Paul Morrill. So, you know, kudos on that for sure. I want to get a couple more topics in here before I let you go. Karen Reed's trial's underway. I admitted to you, I was kind of fascinated by, you know, what the Max series on this. I think she's guilty, but, you know, she does have a strong defense team. There's seemingly some reasonable doubt. Any way to gauge the way that trial's starting out in Boston?
I'm hearing it's going better today. I have good sourcing up there. The first couple of days were a little rough for the prosecution. Jackson dinged up the initial witnesses pretty good, I think most specifically when he got Kerry Roberts to say that she, quote-unquote, misstated some of her testimony in the grand jury as compared to what she said later. That's a problem because once you are a, quote-unquote, I don't want to say liar because she's saying she didn't do it on purpose, but once you haven't been exactly accurate, it's very easy for the jury to say, well, then who is accurate on the prosecution side? That stuff tends to be sort of contagious. But that said, Brennan is doing something very, very clever. He is juxtaposing the testimony in court from live witnesses with video of Karen Reed taken from her campaign, her charm campaign,
mm-hmm,
on HBO Cinemax. But here's the thing. He also got, thanks to the magic of subpoenas, he also got the uncut stuff, the stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor, the stuff that they didn't edit.
Wow.
So he's got stuff that looks a lot more natural, and they see her laughing about the whole thing, saying things that I'm sure she'd like to have back that she never thought would come out. And so he's already painting her as a little bit of a, maybe more than a little bit of a villainess. So in the terms of the battle for the hearts,
right,
of the jury, right now, I might give a 55% to 60% edge to Brennan, especially after he put the mother on the stand and then they did the same thing. They played some videotape where I think it's going to come down in terms of the head. If that's the heart, let's do the head, the Google search. The Google search was by far the most dispositive element of the case the first time around. The testimony was that it happened at 2:27 before the body was found. And Jen McCabe, one of the women at the party, is the one who did the Google search. If that's the case, There's no way she should have known there was a body in the snow. Jan McCabe is in on it. Here's the problem. Celebrate.
Yeah.
The Israeli forensic digital company that did the extraction, who I know well, I used to work with them. They're top of the food chain. They're excellent. However, they blew this.
Yeah. And they admitted it, right?
According to what I'm hearing, they're going to admit it, and they're going to be a prosecution witness and say, no, we changed our software as a result of this case because we got it so bad when we looked back at it. We were wrong the first time around. It was done at 6:20. 6:20. Right when Jen McCabe says Karen Reed at the scene told her to do it. And in fact, it's a first responder that's going to corroborate that.
Well, that makes sense.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, if that comes out, because that certainly was a key, you know, sticking point in the first trial where I think it planted a lot of reasonable doubt. How about, look, Paul, we don't have time to do this, but I am so fascinated because I also watched the Gilgo Beach murder documentary. Holy moly. I mean, you and I have talked about that before, but for those of us who don't live in that area and aren't as familiar with the case, it's mind-blowing. Outside of the murders and Rex Sherman, the corruption in Suffolk County that was highlighted was stunning.
Yeah, I don't believe this stuff that you're hearing that the chief of police, Chief Burke, had something to do with the murders. He almost certainly did not. That is mission creep in terms of what went on with him. Look, he was far from an upstanding citizen. God bless you. Full disclosure, I've met him a few times at conventions and things like that because it's near New York City. I had to work with his people. I had no involvement in this case here, but he turns out to be not a good guy. That said, he's not the killer. They got the right guy. That said, under Burke, because he was obstructionist, he didn't let all the tools, in my opinion, that could have been used, because Suffolk County has good people. It's a big agency. They had the horses, but somehow or other, they missed the witness that had tangled with Heuermann a little bit at the scene of the last victim when he picked before he picked her up. So he had seen the guy and he had seen the car. Yep. And let's remember something, using the same digital evidence that they had 12 years ago, the same evidence, a young state police officer from the New York State Police, who her name's not out, I'm not going to say it, but because I don't know it, actually, but it'll come out at trial. If he goes to trial, looks like he's gonna. He took the same digital evidence and in about a month came up with the name. Now, I know the methodology she used, and if you do phone work, it is the most obvious methodology. And the idea that they didn't do it, Suffolk didn't do it, is mind-boggling. But I'm just going to add one caveat you don't hear again to advance the story. The FBI data is what she used. The FBI mapped the cell sites in order to ascertain, they were trying to investigate the case. And the big argument is that Burke didn't let the FBI help him. Well, she used FBI data. And my big caveat to this all along here is, where was the FBI then? Why didn't they assert jurisdiction? A lot of these girls came from across state lines. They'd have no problem getting jurisdiction. If they were so interested in the case, why didn't they take it? Because they could have solved it the same way this state cop did. More power to her. But there's more blowback here than just the Suffolk PD, who didn't get all of the facts in line. Bureau was, I think, absent as well. There's a lot to answer for here. Thankfully, it doesn't look like he killed anybody subsequent to that investigation. But ultimately, they got him, and more power to the Suffolk people that got him now.
Well, yeah, and you know, look, I always warned, as good as that documentary was, there's always things that they keep out. You mentioned Karen Reed, too. The TV show is different than real life. Paul, this was great stuff. I always appreciate you coming on here. Have a great weekend. I appreciate it.
Enjoy the country, pal. Good to hear from you.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I think you and I, Sue, share a little affection for Steve Winwood.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I want to bring something up here with our friend Tim Summer, who's going to talk music. We welcome Tim to the show while I'm playing Steve Winwood. How are you, Tim Summer?
Always.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Let me ask you this, because I've expressed my love and admiration before for John Mayer. I love John Mayer. I have a man crush on him. He's got a Sirius XM station. So I'm listening to that yesterday, sure, maybe even this morning, and he's playing Steve Winwood. He plays Steve Winwood, and he says, think about this song in a different way than you maybe already have, lyrically. And he said, and maybe there's something to this, I don't know, he said, what if Steve Winwood was talking, when he says a higher love, he's talking about God, right?
That's what I always thought it was.
Right.
And I agree with, you know what, when I probably was in my 20s when I first heard that song, and I'm with Sue. That's the first thing that occurred to me.
See, yeah. I'm dumb. I guess I never really thought of it that way. I just thought of it a higher love between people, which I guess still applies, but he just kind of gave me a different approach to interpreting that song, which I always kind of appreciate. But you guys are smarter than I, so there you go. There's proof of that right here. We don't have to talk
much
further.
I want to say something. I want to say something to you, and I want to say something to Sue and everyone who works there. You know what? I want to say something about the Mark Reardon Show. It is smart and it is fun. And people need to tune into the show because they're going to hear smart people and they're going to have a good time. They're not going to be lectured to. They're not going to be hectored at. They're not going to be told what to think. They're going to listen to smart people and they're going to have a good time. And one of the reasons I'm saying that, other than my affection for you guys, is you sound like you're having a very good time today.
We are, but, you know, when you say you're not going to be lectured at, have you listened to the show before? That's one question I would have. No, but I appreciate it, Tim. That was very nice of
really
you to say.
That's really a nice thing to say.
You know what? I listen to the whole show today. I always listen on the days that I'm on and sometimes when I'm not. And you never tell people what to think. God bless you for that.
One of the things that I think is, and this is why I appreciate what you're saying, is there's an assumption sometimes that's made on the part of other people just because of the radio station that we just do all politics. We don't do all politics. We talk about a lot of things that, you know, Sue, a couple of days ago, and this connected with the audience in a way that you might predict because everyone has to get you United States Mail, Postal Service packages. Sue lost a package of shampoo, and we talked about that a couple of days ago. And, man, all kinds of reaction because it's such a relatable thing.
Yeah.
People could connect with. So very kind words, Tim Summer.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Well, let's start with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because we did on Sue's News a couple of days ago talk about, you know, the results of the fan voting. But then Sue also made mention of the fact that the fan voting doesn't really mean that's who's going to get in, right? It's just part of the voting process.
It's only one vote, right, Tim?
That's correct. It's not a big, you know, and I'm going to say it's an interesting lineup this year. It's a very interesting lineup this year.
So who's going to get in? What's the prediction here?
Because usually there are people where you look at the list and you say, they're a lock. I don't see locks this year. If you ask me to pick, if you ask Tim Sommer to pick who he thinks is going to get in this year, I would say the closest thing to a lock, there are two artists that I would say are the closest thing to a lock, which is not to say they are a lock. The closest thing to a lock to me is Cyndi Lauper and Manna, okay? Just because I think the political climate of the time, and I'm not going to elaborate on that, is going to compel people to vote for Manna. That's all I'm going to say and leave it at that. So Cyndi Lauper, Manna, I think those are the closest things to locks. If you're going to ask me to pick three or four others who I think are going to get in this year, I'm going to say Joe Cocker, Soundgarden, Outkast, and my friend Billy Idol. And I'm going to leave it at that. But it's a much more wide-open year than usual. Now, who won the fan vote? Was it Fish?
It was Fish. And then Bad Company was second, and Billy Idol was third.
I would say, you know what? Fish could get in. It's wide open this year, and I think that's very interesting. I think that's a sign that they're sort of getting a little better at nominating, at their nominating process, that it's such a wide-open field. Who do you guys think are going
to
get
in? It's hard for me to gauge just because of the politics, but you mentioned Mana. They're Mexican, is that it? Hispanic-Mexican.
Yes.
So they get only 35,000 votes in the fan vote, which is kind of, you know, expected because nobody knows them. But because of the politics, I guess you say they might get in. I would anticipate that Fish gets in. I would hope Billy Idol gets in. Look, I'm very partial to Bad Company. I love Paul Rodgers because he's done so much in a variety of different bands. I was a huge Bad Company fan. I think they had a lot of influence in the mid to late 1970s. It's hard for me to keep Cyndi Lauper out, not because I think she's a rock artist, but because of her influence. I don't know. You know, if I'm making cuts here, I'd say Chubby Checker probably can wait a little while, right?
Yeah, and I don't think every year Joy Division, New Order are nominated, and every year they don't make it in, and I don't think this is the year for them. I don't think this is Oasis's year. The White Stripes belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't think this is their year either. So in a way, you're right. It's easier to eliminate people. And you know what? Maybe it's wrong for me to have eliminated, to said Fish won't get in. Fish probably will get in. You know what? And I said, this is a positive thing that's so wide open, that the nomination process is not nearly as politicized as it has been in the past years, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, it is.
So they're going to announce this, I guess, Sunday night during American Idol. That's something new, isn't it?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
I didn't either until I just read it, but I guess that's the way that they're going to kind of reveal, if you will, unfold the nominees. One of the things we want to talk
about. I will confess, a little bias here, because I did use my skills as a journalist. Not as a journalist, that's the wrong way to put it. I did work with Billy Idol to write some things to increase his profile, let's put it this way, during the period when he was running up to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For instance, there's a terrific, terrific Billy Idol video up on YouTube of him playing the MTV New Year's Eve Bowl 1983, okay? It is a fantastic video. It is rock and roll. It is sloppy. It is fun. It's exactly the kind of thing you don't associate with the slickness of MTV. Like, songs start off in the wrong key. Billy forgets lyrics. But they're having a great time on stage. And if you go to that on your YouTube page, you will see that the blurb that goes along with it is something that I wrote. I'm very proud of that.
Well, and nice. We got to mention here, and I haven't checked it out. I just put it in my queue earlier today in title, but Billy Idol has got a new album out today, like brand new record.
And again, I'm a little biased because I'm friends with Billy, but it is a wonderful, wonderful album. And the single that came out today is a duet with Avril Lavigne. And it is just, he's doing serious adult rock and roll. Let's put it that way. He's taking everything you've loved about Billy Idol, and he's doing it as a 69-year-old man, as a man reflecting on his life. His new album is a concept album looking back on his life and his journey through his addictions, through punk rock, through stardom, through the motorcycle accident that nearly killed him. He's written sort of almost like a Pete Townsend-type rock opera, but it's about his life. And I have to say, it's going to be, I don't want to speak for either of you guys, but it's going to be one of your favorite records of the year. I mean that.
But also, there's a documentary that, you know,
I guess
was at Tribeca that's called Billy Idol Should Be Dead that they're starting to push out there as well. That could be interesting.
Billy is not someone who he takes himself very seriously. He takes his art very seriously, but he doesn't have that big a head. He really doesn't. He can be very, very modest and very honest about who he is and the mistakes he's made in his life. And that's why he's willing to call a documentary that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I love, you know, this. We've talked about it before. I love the good music and rock documentaries, so I would be looking forward to that.
I wanted to add something else, too. You were talking earlier, and it was a great discussion, about the great first lines of rock and roll songs.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as someone who has produced records, as someone who has made records, as someone who is in the music business, I've been in the studio with many bands, including many bands who are making famous records. And there is nothing as important as those first 15, 20 seconds of a song. And when I think of that, really, really, can you beat a better opening line? Can you beat a better opening line than S-A-T-U-R-E-A-Y, night?
That's a good one.
What gets better? Not only than that, you've said the title of the damn song in the first line of the song so people know what to ask for.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that one. You know, and then some song, I've heard different philosophies on this. I can't remember which songwriter I heard, but, you know, there are songs that start with the first verse, but there are a lot of songs that start with the chorus, right?
Yes.
And I've heard songwriters say, look, you start with the chorus because that's the strongest part of the song. Now, not every song can be structured or crafted that way, but that's a tool that is used for sure.
you know, when you're dealing with not just pop music, all you know, even weird music, but I'm just, you know, you're grabbing people. You are fighting a happy fight, a happy war for people's ears. Now, I want to ask you guys something. I was looking over the list of the artists playing in St. Louis over the next few months, okay? The last time we had a discussion about who was playing in St. Louis in the St. Louis area, okay? I can't remember when it was, maybe about 6 months ago, 8 months ago.
Right.
I don't. We were like, oh, well, there's no one coming.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What the hell happened? There was an embarrassment of riches in St. Louis in May, June, and July. What happened?
Well, good. I mean, sometimes it's a timing thing. I have no idea, but I do think we're being skipped over. I mentioned AC/DC, not that they're going to every city, but you're saying that the lineup for this early summer and spring is pretty strong, is what your assessment is.
It seemed great. Like, you're going to see Brooks and Dunn tonight, is that correct?
I'm not. They are here tonight, just down the street from us, but I can't do it tonight. I would go.
First of all, I'm also going to interject with something again, a slight irrelevancy, that when are you going to make your playlist up on, put your playlist up on a streaming service?
I am. I've been doing it for 2 weeks. Yeah, I've done it for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I put a Spotify
Shows
list.
Shows what I know.
Yeah, well, but it's new. It is a new feature, and we've had, you know, you were not on the air for a little while because we've been doing the fish fries. But yeah, I just thought, and you were one of the people that recommended that. So I put the playlist up there on Twitter every day, and I put a Spotify. I like Tidal, as you know, as my music service, but Spotify is a little bit more user-friendly. So every day at around 6 o'clock or by about 6:10, the playlist is up there.
You guys, well, let me also say this. Also,
sure.
On the list of the, you know, best rock song beginnings and lyrics, there was Prince, Dearly Beloved. And I think that's a really good one.
That's right. Yeah. You know why? You know why? It grabs you. You go, what
yes.
the hell is happening here?
That's
what
right.
is going on here? And the most effective songs are the ones where you go, what is going on here? I need to know more.
That's exactly Here's right.
I don't think we mentioned Styx. This is a pretty good opening line. Renegade, Oh Mama, I'm in fear for my
life.
Oh,
that's another good one.
How about this one from Warren Zevon for Werewolves of London? I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for a place called Li Ho Fook's, gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. That's a great one. There's so many of them, right?
You know, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of shows coming to the St. Louis area. People are going to have a great time this spring.
You highlight there on some of the tours? Because I have not been as effective at tracking some of the folks that are coming through town. Like, I've got a couple of things on my calendar. I'm like, if I'm open that night, I'd love to see them. But there's nothing. Right now, I don't hold tickets for any shows,
right,
period, which is a little weird.
If you want to see, okay, I'll just jump right into it. If you want to see one of the best new British bands, the kind of band where people are going to go, you saw them back in the day? Okay. Let me get this date right. On May 13th at Off-Broadway,
yep.
There's a band called The Tubbs playing. The Tubbs, T-U-B-S.
Huh.
They are a fantastic new British band who play old school Smiths, R.E.M. type jangle pop. They've like gone back, they're a young band, but they've gone back in their sound 30 years to that wonderful jangle sound of R.E.M. and the Smiths. And they're going to be, I think they're going to be really big in America, so this is a chance to catch them at a smaller venue.
Well, I love that.
Speaking of the Smiths, I see that Morrissey is playing The Factory on May 12th, if he doesn't cancel. As you probably know, Morrissey has a bad history with cancellation.
Yes, I'm aware of that for sure. On the Tubbs, just real quickly, I just put it into my queue on Tidal, but that is a great, Off-Broadway is a great, just grungy little place. If you're right about this band blowing up, that would be just a classic, epic location to see that band for the first time.
Totally.
And this is just a delightful band. I mean, there are a lot of us who grew up, including, I think, you guys, who grew up on college radio, who grew up listening to bands like, I don't know, R.E.M., Toad the Wet Sprocket, on and on and on, bands like that. And this is a return to that sound, but they're a young English band, and they're an absolute delight. Once again, they're called The Tubbs, T-U-B-S. Now, if you want a night that you're not going to forget and that your ears may not forgive you for...
won't recover?
Uh-oh.
This is a venue I'm not familiar with. Red Flag?
Red Flag's a place that I've never been to. My kids go there quite a bit.
Really?
My son Aiden, who's a teacher in Chicago, he and his girlfriend have gone to Red Flag. I've dropped them off there to multiple shows over the last, 6 or 7 years. So it's down closer. It's if you go down Oliver,
it's on Locust.
So it's down a couple of miles from here. It's not that far. So who's there?
On May 19th, how's this for a double bill? Napalm Death. And the Melvins. As you may or may not know, the Melvins were Kurt Cobain's favorite band. Oh. The Melvins play loud, groaning, and I use that word very deliberately, loud, groaning, grinding heavy metal punk. So if you want to have a great night that you will remember and that your ears will not forgive you for, see Napalm Death and the Melvins at Red Flag on May 19th. So that's on my list. I don't know how you guys feel. One of my favorite types of music, not necessarily to listen to on a record, but if you ever have a chance to experience live, you will thank me if you see the Rebirth Brass Band. Have either
no,
you guys ever seen
No,
the Rebirth
not
Brass
even
Band?
Familiar with that.
Okay, it's New Orleans brass band music.
Ooh.
Which is thumping, New Orleans style, honking fun night. You will have a great time. The Rebirth Brass Band from New Orleans are playing City Winery on June 1st. I didn't even know you guys had a City Winery. Is that new there?
Yeah, it's relatively new. I'd say 2 years maybe. I've been there a couple of times, but I've been there for very, very singer-songwriter acoustic sets. I've never really seen anyone really rock or blow horn section in there, so that could be interesting.
You will, again, you will thank me for this, just as if you've never seen the Melvins, I mentioned them before, they're playing at Red Flag on May 19th. If you've never seen the Melvins, they are a pioneering band who are a big influence on Nirvana and a big influence on an entire generation of sort of grunge, drony metal bands, if you like that sort of thing, which not everyone does. Now I'm going to move right ahead. June 14th at the Hollywood Casino. Is that the name of the place?
Yeah, that's the big amphitheater. That is our outdoor amphitheater.
Yeah. June 14th, Dave Matthews Band. And, the longest month of my life was spent at a three-hour Dave Matthews concert. But there's some people who are really into that thing. And Dave Matthews, I'll flat out say this without any hesitation, one of the nicest men in the history of rock and roll is
Dave. Oh, that's good to know.
Well, here's you'll find this interesting, Tim. So when I met my wife, this would have been, early 2000s, my number one band still is the E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen. She was a big Dave Matthews fan. So I've taken her to probably 10 Springsteen shows. She's taken to me to probably 10 Dave Matthews shows, sometimes with, sometimes his acoustic show. And I will say this, that, I've seen him multiple times. It's outstanding live, and I can probably just watch his drummer, Carl Buford, just hit his drum kit over and over. He's so damn good, I could just watch him drum for 3 hours. That's just my opinion.
High-end musicianship, incredibly original music. It gets a little tiring for me personally.
I get it.
A little samey.
Yeah.
But, Dave Matthews once said to me, this is an absolutely true story, Dave Matthews once said to me, and I will admit that there may have been a little alcohol involved. He might have been a little, let's just say, affected by,
sure, fair enough,
by the gin, let's put it that way, at the time. Dave Matthews once said to me that his music was like petting dolphins. That's what his music is. That his music was music to pet dolphins by. And if the man said it, who's to disagree with him? But I know there are a lot of Dave Matthews bands fanned out there. I also see that the big Outlaw Music Festival is playing Hollywood Casino on Amphitheater on June 28th. Now, that's Willie Nelson, who's well into his 90s, and Bob Dylan, and who's well into his 80s. And I got to say, if you've never seen Bob Dylan or only seen him in the distant past, Bob Dylan is a man who gets what live rock and roll is all about, much in the same way that Bruce Springsteen does. I think Bruce Springsteen goes out there every night to have an experience between him and the audience, but mostly for himself. And that's what Bob Dylan does.
You know,
Bob Dylan every night steps on stage and he's saying, I am going to have a good time and remind myself why I love rock and roll. And I think it's exactly the same thing Bruce Springsteen does. I think Bruce Springsteen has a love affair with rock and roll, and that's what he brings to the stage every night. That's what Bob Dylan does, too. And who knows when will be the last time.
That's true about that.
True.
Bob Dylan or Willie Nelson. I have a feeling we're at the end of the line for Willie Nelson, not because he's in ill health or something, but how much longer can he go on?
Tim, I got to go. You know we can talk music all night, but I got to look at the clock, and unfortunately I didn't look at the clock. So I will talk to you when I'm back from Greece, but thank you so much.
God bless both of you.
Have
a great time.
That's Tim Sommer. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
I always do that when we're talking with Tim Sommer. We're talking about music, and I never look at the clock. Plus, my brain has been malfunctioning nonstop this afternoon,
Sue.
It's just
pre-vacation brain, I think.
I'm gonna chalk it up to that as well. But I have time, barely enough time, to do this here this afternoon.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, look, this is just a sample, and I'm going to tell you right now, I haven't even heard this, but I knew that Bill Maher would have a response to the ridiculous column that Larry David, I think Larry David's so funny. I loved Curb. I love Seinfeld. But he wrote this ridiculous op-ed as if he was Bill Maher going to meet Trump, and it was his meeting with the Führer, with Hitler. See what he did there? Not very funny. Not really thinking about what happened during the Holocaust. But here's Bill's partial response.
To use the Hitler thing, first of all, I just think it's kind of insulting to 6 million dead Jews. You know, like that should kind of be in its own place in history. Hitler has really kind of got to stay in his own place. He is the goat of evil. And we're just going to have to, I think, leave it like that.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
Go back to yesterday when I read the speech that Milton Rydell gave in 1978 in Kansas City. He's the father-in-law of a friend of mine who was in concentration camps. And it's awful. It's not even close to what's barely happening in this country. Sue, I'm off for about 2 weeks.
Oh, have a great trip, Mark. We're going to miss you.
We'll see you on May 8th. Have a great weekend.